This special edition of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Braintree. Even the best mobile app won't work without the right payments API, and that's where the Braintree V.0 SDK comes in. One amazingly simple integration gives you every way to pay. But don't take our word for it. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/androidcentral. Everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 266 for Friday, December 11th, 2015. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Nickinson. We are doing things a little different this week, as we tend to do in December, especially as we creep into the holidays. We are recording this ahead of time, and there's a really good reason for that. Everybody loved the first podcast we did on our History of Android series so much. We wanted to do another one, and we wanted to really crank it up this time. So we got three well-known developers to sit in with us, with me and Russell, actually. We have Kosh. Everybody knows Kosh. Clockwork Mod, Visor, all sorts of really awesome apps, especially for the modding community. We have Chris Lacey. You know him from an old-school Twitter client, especially from Action Launcher, which is one of my favorite launchers. Link Bubble. So Chris has been around a long time, and a really good guy to know in here. And if you haven't listened to his podcast, you need to, at the Blurg. And we have Joe Braidwood from SwiftKey, which is one of the more popular keyboard apps out there. And again, it's the one I use. I love it. Really cool company. Some really interesting stuff they do. And we wanted to hear from them about kind of their history of Android and how they started in it and started developing and where they think things are now and where things are going. So it's a really interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Again, not a live show this week, so no voicemails or emails or anything. If you want to, you can still send those in to podcast@androidcentral.com, and we will pick those up with one last show of the year, maybe, actually. Let me look at the calendar. Yeah, it should be until the new year, so we'll figure that out. But one more live show coming up after this one, then we'll take the Christmas week off. I really hope you enjoy this. And again, if you haven't seen our Android history series, just go to historyofandroid.com. Alex worked his butt off on this. I think it turned out really well. Thanks, enjoy, and Russell, take it away.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Android Central Podcast. We are going to do something a little different this week. We are going to wrap up our big Android history project with one big group interview with three people responsible for many different apps that I think most of you know. So we're going to go ahead and introduce them individually and then jump right in. First we have Chris Lacey. Chris, you have like 500 or 600 apps that everyone knows about?
Well, it's mainly just one these days. It's mainly just Action Launcher. I did write Link Bubble, which was went pretty well last year, but I sold that during the year to another company who are going to make it bigger and better. So it's mainly Action Launcher for me these days.
Do you want to tell us who that is yet? Because I don't think anybody knows. Just tell us now. Go ahead, spill it.
Yeah, it's not my info to share, I'm afraid.
Fine.
Next up, we have Joe Braidwood, who's the Chief Marketing Officer for SwiftKey. Joe, how's it going?
It's going very well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Let's imagine that there are five people in the entire planet who have no idea what SwiftKey is. Go ahead and tell us.
It's basically the answer to everything you've ever thought was terrible about your smartphone keyboard, all bundled up to make it awesome. Is that a good enough answer? I don't know. Yeah.
I think that works. And we will wrap it up with Kaushik Duda, who I think everyone in the world knows as Kosh, as like everywhere. And you also have a whole bunch of different apps that do all kinds of little things.
Yeah, I got a few.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what you're working on right now.
Right now it's mostly Visor, which is... there's a beta out right now, but there's a lot more coming. But prior to that, it was Allcast and Helium and ROM Manager and CyanEngineMod and Super User and a whole bunch of other stuff. So chances are you've probably used one of my apps at least.
So that's a big reason why I asked all three of you guys specifically to be here. A big part of what we've been doing with the Android History Project, which everyone can find at historyofandroid.com, is just... an entire look from beginning to end at how Android has grown and changed. And, apps are obviously a gigantic part of that, and developers are a gigantic part of that, and you three have been around for a really long time. Not necessarily from the beginning, but, really, really close. So I wanted to talk to each of you about, just how the platform has changed and start with that. I wanted to know if you guys could talk about your individual introductions to Android. You know, the first phone you used when you decided to try developing for it. You know, what was your introduction to this operating system? I guess we'll go ahead and start with Chris.
Okay, so my first phone was the HTC Desire HD, and I had that phone mainly because it was the time the iPhone 4 came out, so in 2011, and it was a combination of stock shortages on the iPhone 4 itself and my just being so entirely jacked off with Apple's iOS 4 update that they released that just crippled my previously entirely usable phone. So I just basically rage quit. And I started looking at Android more and more and thought, okay, there's a lot here. I'll give this a shot. And I liked the Desire HD. I didn't stick with it too long because they had some nasty bugs like syncing the calendar and stuff. And so I quickly switched out to a Nexus S. As far as when I decided to try developing for the platform, it was probably not too long after that. It was basically when the HoloStart standards came out, and I hated each and every Twitter client that was out there and thought I would try and write my own with Tweetland. So I did that.
Right on. Joe, when did you first start with Android? Because you've been a part of this for a little while now. SwiftKey's been around for a pretty long time.
6 years. Yeah. Well, so it's coming on for 6 years. I read about Android when, what was that? That sort of first device. I can't even remember its name anymore.
The G1.
Yeah, T-Mobile was pushing it in the United Kingdom, and I was thinking, oh, this is cool, because I loved Google products, and I thought that the iPhone wasn't that great at integrating them. So I was thinking, like, the idea of having all of these things, being able to actually multitask, which back then was something you couldn't do, caught my interest. But my first device was the HTC Hero, which I think was probably, for a lot of us, the kind of first Android phone that kind of got genuinely exciting. And I used that for a little while, and then very soon after I went to MWC with what was then a very fledgling SwiftKey team, and I wasn't even formally working for them at the time, just helping them out. And I went to the launch event of a beautiful new phone called the HTC Desire, and I was sat next to a guy called Phil Nickinson by a complete random incident. So we were kind of all in it together from that day, I guess.
Right on. Coach, when did you start? Did you start with the G1?
I was at a company that was pretty, we were a Windows phone, Windows mobile company, I guess it was called back then. And we decided Windows mobile was a burning platform and started on Android 30 days before the G1 is even released. So we're using the emulator to try to build our apps. So pretty much before I even had a device, I was doing Android development. I got the G1 when it came out. So that's when I had my first official device. Versus the Goldfish emulator or whatever it was.
I remember that thing being really just not very good.
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
All right, cool. So, you know, for each one of you, you know, what was the biggest challenge starting to develop for Android in the very, very early days? The first set of problems that you came across, you know, where you're you know, working with Android and there was just these roadblocks that either took, you know, a really long time to overcome or initially just couldn't be.
So for me, like when I think back, like obviously the state of development has improved an awful lot since when I started, but I don't remember things being, well, I would say the worst thing immediately that came to mind was the emulator. And unfortunately I wouldn't say that's too much better. Although I think Google are releasing a newer version of that, which they announced at the Dev Summit a few weeks back. So hopefully there's life there, but, I think, looking back at it now, certainly there was there were a lot of open source libraries. I remember even something simple like being able to just load an image from the web into an image view. And eventually I stumbled on Kosher's library for that one. I forget what the name of that was offhand. What was that?
URL image view or something. Yeah. I can't remember.
Whatever that was.
No longer supported.
It had a super catchy name.
Certainly when I think about working with, like I'd worked in games before, and you think about the early days working on a GameCube dev kit or anything like that, I don't think there were anywhere near the challenges that there were. I mean, Eclipse was and is now, you know, now not the greatest piece of software and has long since been surpassed by Android Studio, but I didn't have too many issues getting up and going quickly, and it's especially helped when I was doing it because at that point Holo had come out and Google were going to release the Android design, the Android stylings. I think they released it at CES a few months later, so by the time I got on board, it was I didn't have too many horror stories. Maybe different there.
So Joe starting out early for SwiftKey. I mean, there was a lot of things happening with keyboards being able to work on Android. So what were you know some of those early problems that you guys found?
I think you know so I'm not a developer anymore, but talking from the perspective of you know trying to think about all of the challenges we ran into, it was you know just doing any kind of QA on a keyboard in an ecosystem where there was a new device being added, what felt like every week, was really really difficult. So we ended up building a framework for automated testing that we open source because we just thought that, you know, as you were saying, like Eclipse was this tool kind of designed to be used in the bedroom of a developer, right? It wasn't a tool designed to be used by a group of engineers in an office. And we were probably one of the first companies that actually devoted our entire operation to building Android software. So trying to build create a good build system, trying to create a good way to test the things we were working on and kind of do that in an environment with, you know, 10, 20, 30 engineers was a real challenge. One of the other things for us that really kind of caught us by surprise was just trying to commercialize the software. So when we launched SwiftKey back in 2010, originally we had a great time partnering with Android Central in terms of sort of building early alpha and beta traction. But when we actually created a paid app, can you imagine? We couldn't even file our taxes that year because Android wouldn't let you export that many items in a spreadsheet to check your tax return. So it was stuff like that that was just kind of these wrinkles in the system that no one had even thought of. They capped it at 500 sales a day because they thought these guys in their bedrooms are never going to produce more than 500 sales a day, right? And that was when it was like 1% of the market, and here we are today, and it's the majority stake. So, it's been an interesting learning curve.
Coach, what about you? What did you run into early on?
G1 was super slow. Emulator was super slow. I remember actually using the emulator just because you could give it like an infinite amount of RAM. So I did that and used that over the G1 because I was always running out of memory. The other funny thing was that like when you start on a new platform, there's no Googling for answers and there's no Stack Overflow, right? So like you're literally trying to find out how to do something with no documentation. Documentation was really weak back then, I remember that. And there was a site called AndDev, I think, where that was like the site where you went to for all the documentation. It was just like this high school or college kid that got into it really early. So like trying to figure out how to do stuff would inevitably lead you to this one site. That's my initial early experiences. That's changed a lot, you know, since Android has been out for 6-7 years or whatever it is now, and you can go to Stack Overflow and find everything. And the documentation on the Android Google site is pretty amazing now as well. So
is it still one of those things where, you know, working with an emulator is still just not like the best way to do it? You still end up working on a device instead now? Because things have gotten a little faster in both places.
So if you use Visor, you can just pretend your device is an emulator.
All right, that's fair enough.
Well, and you've got more options now too, right? There's not just Google's emulator. We've got things like Genymotion and obviously Visor, and those are two things I see our developer use every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a whole lot easier, and a lot of that comes from, you know, what everyone said, that, you know, the documentation has been there, and it's been several years where people are working and creating new ideas.
I would say it's still not nearly as good as iOS's simulator, which has been there for 5+ years.
What's one of the big things that, you know, is it just performance overall, or is there anything specific about Apple's emulator that stands out?
Apple's using
the performance
simulator.
Is the biggest thing for me. It boots up instantly, it loads, you get your app running on it instantly, and like I said, Google are definitely making strides here, but it has taken quite a while, and it's not quite here yet.
What were you saying, Coach?
Apple is using a simulator, not an emulator, so it's basically running iOS on OS X.
Okay.
More or less. So it's not doing like an ARM to x86 transpile or whatever emulation. It's native processes running on your computer. It's really slick. It works really well.
Cool. Chris, when did this become a job? When did you go from, you know, messing around with you know, Android and you know, playing with tweet lanes to making this something that just sucked up most of your time?
Well, in the first, you know, 8 months or whatever, my time was exclusively writing tweet lanes, and then after that I got the urge to write a launcher, so I did that, and Action Launcher came from that. And I started selling Action Launcher, but I was doing that while I was still working a day job writing iPad apps. And then it basically got to a point where I couldn't do that anymore. It was impossible for me to work a day job effectively, do work on a launcher, be a present, you know, family member and all that sort of stuff. So there was a fork in the road. Thankfully, we got to the point where I'd proven, okay, Action Launcher is doing well enough so that I could say, look, I think if I did this full time, I could at least, you know, not go backwards if I gave up the other job. And so my wife was very supportive there. And so I think it was around March 2013. So a bit over 2 years I've been doing it full time.
Right on. Joe, you kind of started off right off the bat doing this as a, you know, as a whole company. So I guess a differently phrased question for you: when did you know, at what point in Android's development did this become, you know, like a really big you know, project? This is something that, you know, you knew you had to hire a bunch of people immediately and grow really fast to handle the you know, increase in demand.
I think that kind of all happened in 2010. So we started 2010 out at Mobile World Congress, as I said, you know, when I met Phil and Dieter Böhm back then. And we went to an event that Google threw called the sort of Android Cocktail, I think it was, and met people like Billy Rutledge, who was the lead developer advocate back then, and still is, I believe, with Google. And, you know, that was kind of at the very beginning of it, when we were all sort of figuring out, you know, the co-founders of SwiftKey had this very short runway. The rest of us were just friends helping them out. And it was at that event that we signed a deal with Inc., you know, INQ, the British OEM that back then was trying to create one of these small, cheap social phones that was one of the sort of rumored Facebook phones. So we started working with them to create a keyboard for their platform, and that was our first OEM deal out of that. And later that year, we launched and became a paid app. And basically, we sort of shot to number one in the paid app charts on the Android market that same week. And from then, we were like, okay, right, this is actually something that, that there's a product market fit here. This is something that we really should develop out. This is something that we really should invest more in. And it wasn't soon after that that we raised an actual decent amount of money and started throwing engineers at the challenge. So it was kind of an interesting story over that sort of 9-10 months in 2010, and from there it was kind of an ascent, and we knew that we were onto something.
Coach, what about you? When did this become, you know, more than just something you did for fun or something that you did working for another company?
Like I said, 2009 August or something. I was already at a company that was more or less committed to Android development, so it was just more or less immediately that I was at a company doing that. And then right around the same time, I started doing indie development as a ROM manager, and that took off pretty quick. I was like, oh, okay, this is serious. I should probably consider going indie full-time, and I did that to 2011. So I'd been like at a company invested in Android one way or another since its inception.
But 2011 was when it became clear that you could, you know, basically do this on your own?
More or less. It was one of those things where, like, it's a quite a big leap of faith. Chris can probably attest to this as well. Like, even if you have a job and even if your app sales are doing well, you kind of don't believe it and you kind of don't expect it to last forever. So you, like, I could have quit in 2009 and just continued doing ROM Manager, or started doing ROM Manager from right then, but I was like, I'll play it safe, stick it out at this job, and see what happens.
And it's obviously worked out pretty well.
Yep, so I'm in the full time now.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about modern day Android. We've had a lot of changes recently with material design. Google has introduced a whole lot of new ideas into how Android works. Chris, what do you think largely about the changes that have happened over the last year or two?
I think there's an awful lot of ways I could answer the question. Certainly from a developer perspective, which we've spoken about a lot to this point, I would say it's come on leaps and bounds. We've mentioned Android Studio. Google have done tremendous work with their developer documentation and samples, and the build tools have gotten better. And so I think there's been huge inroads made there. I think as far as sort of Android itself as a whole, I think it's material design, I think, is terrific. I have very little complaints about it. I think it's astounding, you know, to think they're up to, what, 1.5 billion devices, which is just an astonishing number by any means. I do think it's there hasn't been much progress outside of phones, and meaningful progress as far as market adoption. It's definitely still early days in a lot of those initiatives, but I think it's been a pretty incredible ride to sort of observe, and yeah, it is amazing how much Android has changed the world.
Well, but you're doing a launcher app. How much material design can you put into essentially a replacement home screen?
I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity there. Certainly when you think of a lot of elements of material design, things like floating action button and that sort of stuff, like I think it would be pretty gimmicky for me to go down that path. But there's a lot of elements to material, like certainly embracing color. Action Launcher 3 does that pretty extensively with pulling the colors from your wallpaper, so it'll theme the search bar. And there's also an API to get those colors for certain live wallpapers. So that's certainly one way. And the settings are very sort of material designy as well. So it's not going to... A launcher won't necessarily look like a traditional, like Google Inbox or Gmail or something with a big, thick app bar, they're calling it these days, at the top, which you can do in Action Launcher, coincidentally, but I kind of moved away from that a bit with the quick bar and the search bar. It just feels more natural. Yeah.
Joe, you're in kind of a unique position with SwiftKey. Is Google, in a way, kind of started competing with you not too long ago with their own keyboard, you know, as well as, you know, a lot of the changes, you know, visually with material design. How has that been for you guys?
Well, I was going to say, you know, the difference between the beginning and now is that Google's keyboard looks a whole lot more like SwiftKey. but, you know, that that's just when you build something great. When we started out, the keyboard was just not it was almost unusable, unless you hit exactly where you intended, and now it's a much more robust piece of software. So that it's interesting to sort of have been part of that journey. But with material design, with, you know, from a marketing perspective, the changes that have happened to, you know, Android Market is no longer that. It's Google Play, and it has finally, and especially over the last few weeks, a much more beautiful design, much more easy and usable way to find great new software for your device. I think we've come an extremely long way, and we're still in a situation where fragmentation is a real problem. We're still in a situation where getting the latest and greatest takes far too long, and we're still in a situation where emoji are different on every device that you've ever come across, and that's a real shame, because iOS is still kind of really leading in that regard. But it's far more mature and far more exciting to be a part of it. And, you know, just in the last month or so, we launched SwiftKey 6, which fully embraces the material design look and feel, really tries to be a part of that of that movement and really tries to sort of bring SwiftKey fully into line with what Google's really I think, you know, when they hired Matthias Duarte, they really did something brilliant in that design team. And that that legacy is now very much a part of the product. So it's come so far that it's great to have been there for that full journey and seen it.
Now, is the way that we still have, you know, a new device coming out really still just about every week, is that still a significant challenge for you guys?
Well, there have been some of the coolest changes for us have been in the back end of the developer console. So Ellie Powers and the team she led at Google Play have created some great tools for developers to be able to really truly understand when software does screw up and where it's going wrong and how you can create sort of a design in your app that kind of functions across multiple screen sizes and that really is optimized to work on the full range of chipsets and operating systems that are out there. So that has actually, I think, really solved a lot of the problem for us, as well as, of course, the developer's best friend, the staged rollout, which may not be the journalist's best friend because all of a sudden the thing you're embargoed on leaks, so to speak. But, you know, the software quality has really gone up. And that's been a really great sort of step forward for us.
Kosh, what do you think about the way that this stuff has changed? User interface for you has always been kind of, secondary to functionality when it comes to a lot of stuff that you do, because a lot of stuff that you do ends up on the phone almost being kind of, push button and then, receive thing. How has that changed for you?
In terms of how I think the platform has evolved, from my perspective, it seems like the first couple of years it was all about developer adoption and stabilizing the platform. Then in the ice cream sandwich to jelly bean era, it was like, them trying to wrangle all the OEMs to get all the devices playing the same and playing nicely, not getting different behavior per device. You still see some of that. And then most recently, it's been a material design push. I haven't really had any apps that were too design heavy until the all-cache redesign. But before that, design was very secondary to me. And now, I like the direction they're going with it, because they hadn't given design a thought for essentially 5 years, and now it's probably their number one focus for both external developers. Like, they're trying to push people to using material design. They have fantastic documentation around it, and also pushing into their own apps.
I would say on that, I think they did have a focus on design, certainly starting with, I don't know, maybe you can make the case Honeycomb, but certainly Hollow. But I don't think it was a very good design. I think at that point it was more about establishing a standard, and then with Material they established a great standard. And a standard was basically what they needed, because it was kind of a wild, wild west before Hollow, right?
Hate to do it, but we got to take a quick break. When we come back, a lot more from Kosh and Chris and Joe. Don't go anywhere. All right, this awesome special edition podcast was brought to you by Canary, a complete home security system in a single device. Since launching earlier this year, people across the world have been using Canary to stop burglaries and other serious incidents. Canary has a 1080p HD camera complete with a wide-angle lens, motion detection, and night vision, and you can watch your home live at any time. Canary's algorithms send you intelligent notifications when something out of the ordinary is happening at home, and it's got a 90-decibel siren that's loud enough to scare off intruders, or your kids if they're getting into something they shouldn't be. Not that I've done that. Canary also pulls in local police and fire department numbers near your home, so if you're traveling, you can quickly get in touch with the right people. Canary also automatically arms and disarms when you leave or come home. You can link up to 4 Canary devices together in a location, so it's easy to protect homes of all sizes. Plus, and this is one of my favorite things, it's got best-in-class night vision, so you can see just as well in a pitch-black room as you can during the day. And if you don't want the camera on when you're there, privacy mode means that Canary's camera and mic are completely turned off when you're at home. So start protecting your home with Canary today for just $1.99. Go to meetcanary.com and use the promo code Android to get free overnight shipping. That's meetcanary.com and use the promo code Android. Canary, smart home security for everyone.
So let's talk about the users for a little bit here, because I mean, you know, they've been around for this whole time, and there's been a lot of changes across Android, you know, from the beginning to now. One of the big things Joe touched on a couple minutes ago was the idea of a paid app being this you know, almost taboo, you know, especially in places that weren't the U.S. because it took so long for the ability to pay for apps to roll out to every country. You know, so Chris, you know, how have users changed, you know, from the early days of Android to now? Or have they not changed at all? Or are they still, you know, very much the same?
I can't pinpoint too many examples, certainly at least in my apps. I think the people that are buying my apps, which tend to be hardcore users, they still largely, at least as far as Action Launcher, largely the people that you hear from, at least, want the same thing, which is, you know, all the options. I try and sort of strike a balance there between, because every time you add something, you take away simplicity. So there's always sort of an issue there, and there is a very wide spectrum of devices as far as performance to support. You know, it's not just the 6P. You also have to be running on the first Moto E and all that sort of stuff. And I do feel like as apps grow, and I wouldn't say this is necessarily unique to Android at all, but I feel like the bar for creating an app raises. Like I'm just at the moment spending a bunch of time on my my onboarding experience. You know, making it so that the first time you run an app, you do a job, you let people know, okay, if you upgrade, this is what you get, and this is why you want it, and stuff like that. So I think there's certainly a lot more ancillary work like that needs to be done. I don't know if that directly answers the question related to users, but
that's a good one to get into, because I think all three of you have, from various perspectives, run into that wall where it's, all right, what is the best way to update users to a new version but still have revenue come in, which is, you know, absolutely important for app developers. Do you see things getting better in that regard, or are we just missing the ultimate, you know, paid updates?
I don't know. I spoke with Joe mentioned Ellie Powers. I spoke with her quite a bit at Google I/O last year about the process of upgrades and that sort of stuff. And I certainly think there's a large chorus of people that say I want the, you know, better situation for paid upgrades. I don't necessarily have an answer that I have long since, you know, banged on about how I hated Android's permissions until they fixed them in Android 6.0. And I have long banged on that I hate Android's back button, just the fact that it's a random button. I never know with 100% accuracy where I'm going. I don't have the same confidence when I'm talking about the store, because I just think it's a very complicated issue. I'm actually going to try something in the next Action Launcher update. I'm going to add a supporter badge, which I've been working on in the last little bit, where basically, because the Play Store, when you make a purchase, it tells you when that purchase was. So I'm just going to try saying, hey, you know, you purchased this sub $5 upgrade 8 months ago. By any measure, that's a pretty pretty great level of value you've got from that purchase. Do you want to, you know, entirely optional, do you want to pay again to support, you know, ongoing development? If you do, great. If not, no worries. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. That's about the best I can come up with there, but it's a complicated issue, I think.
Now, Joe, have people gotten less irate about the idea of paying for an app, especially a keyboard as you know, insanely popular now as SwiftKey? Or is that still something you guys, you know, run into on a regular basis?
Well, we went freemium about 18 months ago for exactly that reason, which was that basically when Android began, it attracted a certain kind of user. And I personally think it's mostly to do with the fact that the iPhone was exclusive to AT&T, and so Verizon and other key networks in the States, the only option they had was to provision some sort of like-for-like-ish device that was glossy and powerful and cool, and they naturally attracted the sort of user that was more, you know, more tech-savvy, more tuned in to customizing their device, to fiddling with it, to maybe rooting it even. So, you know, for the first two or three years of SwiftKey's history, the users we were attracting, the conversations we were having with folks were really, you know, as Chris said, it was about, hey, I want a setting for everything. I want to control everything. I am the anti-Apple. And that couldn't have changed more if we'd tried in the last sort of two or three years with the sort of broader scope of Android, with the introduction of sub-$100 phones, with some of the sort of extreme branching or forking and replication and all the things that have happened in the Android ecosystem over the last couple of years. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of research. We're quite a research-heavy business at SwiftKey. And in the latest research study that we've just been looking at of the U.S. Android market, just under 50% of respondents don't think they're tech savvy. They don't say that they're tech savvy. You've got about the broadest group of users you can imagine from every walk of life. A lot of folks picking up Android phones because they're cheaper, a lot of phones picking up Android phones because they're nerdier, a lot of folks picking up Android phones because, you know, frankly, they don't want an iPhone, right? And so you have this incredible depth. And because Google Play now is this versatile ecosystem of content, you can have an Android phone and still be plugged in with your friends and still use, you know, whether it's WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger, you can still buy albums, you can still read books on your device. And so it's become far more mass market, far more sort of the whole bell curve rather than just the beginnings of the early adopter market.
Kosh, your apps run all over the place, but they're almost always, you know, really technical. Have users, you know, really changed all that much, you know, from when you started using your products?
Yeah, I started out the really technical, really geeky developer type targeted app, and you get like the open source guys, and when I say open source guys, I don't mean necessarily open source developers, I mean open source users who believe that apps should be free, and that's just how Android works, is Android is open source, even though, like, you know, it's funded by a multi-billion-dollar company, clearly out with a profit motive. So that, trying to sell apps at first, I had a lot of initial backlash on, you know, the open source tools and apps I was building. But as, you know, time progressed, Android became more mainstream. It was less about being like Linux geek, and more about, you know, just having an alternative to Apple and having a cheaper, you know, alternative to Apple that it attracted a larger audience that I don't have the same, like, weird flaming emails about people angry at me because I'm selling an app anymore. It's the audience has matured. It's gotten a bit more, it's gotten quite a bit more broad than it was before.
Sort of a semi-breaking news question here. We all knew that Google Play Music was adding family plans. Apparently it's been added across the board, and it's basically anything you can buy in the App Store now, you can, or in the Google Play Store, you can buy with a family plan. Do you think that's going to open up any of you guys to more, well, I mean, just to families, I guess. Like, am I going to put Action Launcher on my kid's phone now, or I think she already had SwiftKey. I'll have to check.
I don't know. I've not heard anything about that.
I'm looking at it right now. It's tucked into the family plan information, and nobody said anything about it. That's kind of a big deal.
So that means a purchase on one email account can go out to everyone in the family.
Yeah, apps, books, movies, games, TV shows, and magazines.
That wouldn't work for in-app purchases, though, I would
expect. No, that is, in-app purchases are explicitly out.
Yeah.
Put you on the spot there.
It sounds interesting. I think they've got that on iOS, but I believe developers opt in whether they want to allow that or not. Kind of seems a strange thing to allow. This is just my very initial reaction, having heard it 8 seconds ago. It seems a strange thing to have on by default, because Google get more money from the family plan, but they don't. They're not passing any of that on to a developer at all, right?
I don't know.
It's like something that makes more sense for like books and movies.
Yeah, exactly.
versus apps. I don't think Apple does it for apps, but I could be mistaken. Maybe they do.
Apple does it for apps.
They've got family sharing for apps.
Yeah.
Okay, is it an opt-in by the developer or opt-in by...
I know the developers can change whether they're a part of it. I don't know whether it's opt-in or opt-out.
See, what this kind of reminds me of is like how in college, like one guy lends out his Netflix password to like eight other dudes, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could have six people on a family plan, so I mean, you can, and it's the same thing with the iPhone. You know, my both of my daughters have iPods, and so I'll grab something on my iPad, and it's there on their devices, within a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it just sounds as though something that's designed to really compete with the folks who are thinking about whether or not to buy an iPad or an Android tablet and want to download kids' apps and educational apps and that kind of stuff, rather than most of the Android app ecosystem, which is freemium because of the way in which the whole thing has evolved. So more of a competitive posturing to compete with Apple than anything else, it sounds like.
My initial reaction is it feels more geared towards making a lot more sense for movies and music and YouTube Red and that sort of stuff.
Cool. It'd be interesting.
I have one more question for you guys, and I'm going to give you the option to either answer it or walk away.
No! Oh, my God, no. They will answer.
Because it's rough. I want to talk just really briefly about piracy. Is this something you guys deal with on a routine basis? Is there something in particular you do to help deal with it? You know, how does this affect you guys as developers?
It's something I'm conscious of. I would say it's immensely annoying any cycles I have to spend doing anything other than making the app better for the people that support it. I would say I'm definitely not of the mind where I'm just like, anyone is free to pirate my app, go. I don't care. I am not like that. I'm conscious of the fact that this is how I, make my living and that sort of stuff. I do spend, time along the way trying to make it not so easy, but you can often end up chasing your tail on that. It's certainly a rabbit's hole.
Fair done. Joe, you obviously don't have this issue with your core app now because it's freemium, but do you run into this problem with themes that get loaded or anything like
well,
that?
Well, the reason our app is freemium in part is it's two things really. One of them was that we just, the complexity of having a trial and trying to go, hey, you really can make your keyboard better. You can believe us. Come on, try it. Versus just being like, install it. Like, we'll figure it out. But the other reason was piracy. We were seeing tons of folks back, sideload things, and every time we would issue an update, it would go out on Twitter and everything else with, come get the APK here, and it's so easy to sideload on Android that it was just a battle that was kind of almost not worth fighting anymore. And is that a sort of a problem with the platform? I don't know. As Kush was saying, part of what made Android was that you could hack it and you could customize it and that you could make it yours. That was this really sort of Linux, sort of very closely related to a lot of the things that you can do on your desktop in a phone. And that's what makes it a great alternative to a more controlled ecosystem. And that always means that software is going to be more easy to mess around with and to sideload and to hack into. But now that we have this more mainstream audience, they're not so interested in that. They couldn't care less. If half aren't tech savvy, they're not going to pirate anything. So I think it's a problem that is always going to exist, but it's kind of a in the margins, so to speak.
Kosh, has this been a problem that you've ever really had to deal with, or is it an always problem for you?
It's been a problem for quite some time. It's gotten a bit better, but it's not something I worry about too much anymore. I think ultimately, to deal with piracy, you're going to need to... You're not going to get away with piracy unless you have some sort of subscription-based service, in which case you can validate there was a purchase and there's a service component involved. So a lot of my newer apps are gearing towards that route just naturally, and I don't really worry about it too much. Piracy is going to happen. It's not... do what you can to prevent it, but I don't worry too much about trying to catch it all, just because, like Chris said, it's time you're not spending working on features is time being wasted. So do the bare minimum to, you know, use LVL or use the IAP validation, and some people are always going to find a way around it. Can't do much about it. It sucks.
Yeah, the one thing I'd add is it's just like I don't do a Twitter search after an update because I would find it a bit, you know, a bit depressing. But I think it's better just to focus on making the app better and just trying to, you know, I try and I have my podcasts and I try and do posts and social media and that sort of stuff and try and sort of build a relationship, for lack of a better word, with hopefully many in the audience, and then so they get a sense of who they're, you know, buying from and supporting. So that's, I do a bit of focusing there as well.
Have you ever had anybody come to you and say, you know, like flat out tell you that they pirated your app, but then they really liked it, so they bought it?
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely had that.
It wasn't me. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you just, hopefully, you know, you will turn people will sort of get to a point and, decide, okay, you know, I actually really support this, you know, I can afford it, I will buy it. I don't have too much else to say on that, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's funny, I have, in the support emails that I get, I have a whole bunch of metadata included with it, including whether or not the user is like running a Lucky Patcher or any of these other tools that like fake out the licensing responses. So when my buddy gets them in support, he's just like smiling and nodding. He's like, "Oh, you paid for it? Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'll make sure I'm get right on this support ticket."
Like, so they reach out for support even when they know they pirated it to try and get you to support issues.
That's ballsy.
He'll be like, "Did you?" It's like, he'll play with them and like, "Did you buy this?" And he's like, "They're like, yeah. Are you sure it's not just Lucky Patcher or whatever you're using?" And they'll be like, "Oh, sorry."
Wow. Yeah, that takes some stones. That's pretty great. All right. Well, I guess I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. I want to thank all three of you for joining us for this. I think it was a lot of fun. I hope you guys had a lot of fun. Just really quickly, Chris, Joe, Kosh, is there anything you guys want to say about your existing products before we go ahead and wrap this up?
I would say I've got a very big update coming with Action Launcher 3. It'll be out for the first anniversary of Action Launcher 3's release, so next week. I was going to do it earlier in the week, but it may end up being after Star Wars. But there's a lot in there, and I'm really anxious to get it out. So keep an eye out for that one if you like custom launches. Well, I think the update will be done before then, but I just think that's the way the days will fall for me. But
I absolutely approve of those priorities, Joe. What about you?
A couple of things. Firstly, today's an interesting day because we have this program at SwiftKey where we allow engineers and other people across the business to work on pet projects. And today we launched one of them, which is called SwiftKey Symbols. And it's a different kind of communication app for Android that allows children who have trouble communicating, whether it's due to autism or other special needs that they may have, to communicate through pictorial symbols. And this is a free app that we've put out there just because we think, you know, it would be awesome to let folks leverage the power of technology through Android and try and solve that problem and help folks to learn how to communicate when they're young and struggling. So that came out today, which is an example of the other sort of stuff that we do on Android. So check that out.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
We took it to a school in London last week just to road test it with some kids, and some of their teachers said it was the first time that this particular pupil had ever expressed a concept of time. through using the app. So a really emotional moment for the team that worked on it, but something that's kind of a nice warming story for the holiday period and one of the things that we've been working on. So that one, and just that we've got loads more coming. We've got something really cool coming quite early in January that we're just sort of throwing together right now and sort of sanding the edges off. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Now, can I get a SwiftKey theme of the wall art you've got behind you? Can you open
me up with that? You like David Bowie?
I'm a fan. Yeah, that would be. I think
I'll email my design team right after this.
Fantastic.
No lawyers will be involved in that at
That's
all.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm sure the rights are like you just take a screen grab, right?
Yeah. Just take a picture, man. It'll be fine.
No copyright infringement intended.
I'll never tell anybody.
Yeah. All credit to Mr. Bowie. Done.
Coach, are you just a visor Fallout 4 and naps today, or what's going on with you right now?
Yeah, more or less Fallout 4 and visor, but nothing new to announce. So if you really feel like throwing money at the screen this Christmas, go to soda.org and donate. It's a off-leash dog park organization that maintains parks in Washington.
Awesome.
Right on. I lied. I have one more quick question. What phones are you guys using?
6P, and I've got a podcast episode coming up where I review it and gush jubilantly about it. It's amazing.
Nice. Joe's using a G4.
I went to the pub with Phil, and he said, this is the coolest phone. This was in San Francisco 6 months ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, to be fair, that was back at I.O.
Yeah, and so I got one, and I like it. I'm kind of jealous of my coworkers with the 5X, though. I want that.
Right on. Now, I saw yours right before the Hangout, so you might as well just come clean, man. Yep. Real iPhone 6. Is that the Plus or the regular
one? The pink one.
The 6 Plus.
The 6 Plus.
It's just what I had before I got my Nexus 6P. I have one of those two over there, but that's always hooked up for development, but I don't carry it around too much.
Right on. When you're done coding, are you just kind of done with it? You're like, screw it, let's use an iPhone for a while and relax? Or
Like I spend most of my day on an Android, and then I just carry an iPhone around with me.
Thank you guys very much. As always, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. Check it out if you need some stuff for your phone. And we're going to go ahead and call this a show.
Thank you guys so much. That was awesome.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And again, we'd like to thank Braintree for sponsoring this episode of the Android Central podcast. Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. Quick, knowledgeable developer support if you have any questions. You can start accepting Apple Pay, Android Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and whatever's next, all in a single integration. But don't take our word for it. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/androidcentral.